At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Shop the Sherwin-Williams Super Sale and get 40% off paints and stains September 19th through the 24th. With prices starting at $29.39, it's the perfect time to transform your space with color. Whether you're looking to revamp your interior or exterior, we have you covered with bold hues, soothing neutrals, and everything in between. Visit your neighborhood Sherwin-Williams store or shop the sale online. Delivery available on qualifying orders. Click the banner to learn more. Retail sales only. Some exclusions apply. See store for details.
All right, we have Lauren Rogers. Thank you for being on Unscripted Intimacy. I am so excited to get to know you and your story. I was looking through a lot of your content and, you know, people talk about being magnetic and you just are so magnetic. And there's just such a draw and a beauty and a light to you that I am so curious about your journey and what brings you to this space to really lighten up people and give them the map to be able to do that? Give me a little bit about your story.
My goodness. Well, way to make me cry right out of the gates. Thank you.
I can feel that.
Thank you so much. And I'd be honored to tell my story because I think it absolutely connects to probably the magnetism that you are feeling.
Yes.
Because truthfully, I believe that I wake up every day and get to be the person that I needed. During my season of life where I was completely ignorant to all things sexuality, to all things intimacy, to all things relationship, and if only there had been a me. So I would love to tell you about where I have come from, because yes, I sit before you today as a certified holistic sexuality educator and a relationship coach, and that is not where I started. So yeah, I'll give you the briefest backstory, but then please ask more questions if you want to dig deeper. I'll give the overarching and then you know your audience the best and I'd love to speak to whatever it is that catches your ear. I was born in the middle of what we call the Bible Belt, in the middle of central Virginia in Lynchburg, which is kind of the hotbed of evangelical Christianity. My parents met at a Christian college called Liberty University, and they had come to faith out of a non-faith perspective. And I truly believe that they had the best intent. I truly believe that they wanted something better for me than they had experienced.
Yeah.
And so they set out on this adventure. I was their oldest child. I was the oldest of five. And they jumped head first into Reformed Presbyterianism, this idea of courtship, this idea of you belonging to your father until your wedding day. I was parentified. I was just so early indoctrinated in this idea that my body, my purity, was connected to my inherent worthiness. And I was bought in. I knew nothing else. I didn't fight the system. I thought it was great. I thought it was wonderful. And so when I got engaged at 21, it was completely normal. I had heard nothing about sexuality. I didn't think that women even masturbated. I knew nothing other than procreative sex.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't have even called it that because I just thought that was sex. I mean, I didn't know anything.
For the band or whatever.
Yeah, right? So my sweet mother was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer during my engagement. And so we bumped our wedding up from November of 2007 to May of 2007. No lie, on the day that we should have had our first premarital counseling session. It's one of those moments where I'm like, maybe if only we had done this thing, maybe things would have turned out differently, but here we are. So on the eve of my wedding, my mother, again, dying of cancer, says to me, "Lauren, take care of your husband's needs and everything else will be fine." So I went into marriage being told that I had held off, right? I had abstained from all sexual behavior so that I could then be a sex goddess in marriage. I was actually excited, only to feel incredibly rejected, only to be laughed at whenever I would put on some sexy lingerie, only to be pushed away and pushed away and pushed away. This continued for a decade and also was accompanied by alcoholism and so many other things that I didn't think that I could speak of. I thought I was broken. I thought I must be a nymphomaniac. I thought that there must be something truly wrong with me because why didn't my husband want me? Yeah. Our marriage ended up dissolving for many other things, many other forms of abuse that we don't need to go into today specifically. But I found myself alone, without any community, having been ostracized from the church because I chose divorce without the presence of physical abuse or an affair. Those were the only grounds for divorce. Wow. And so I was in this basement apartment, all I could afford. I was utterly penniless. And I was sitting there thinking, something's wrong. Something's missing. So if I'm no longer a virgin, am I now a whore? Like, what is destined for me now? I'm a divorcee. I've only been painted out that divorcees are failures. What now? And so I just began gobbling up books. I began digging and digging and digging. Where did these beliefs even come from? Why was I given this ideal that women were simply a tempting stumbling block for men? Where did this come from? And who am I? And the more I dug, the more I just thought, I have been lied to.
Yeah.
So this began kind of my renaissance, my kind of like reclaiming and reaccessing of what my inherent values-based sexuality was, what I truly wanted from intimate encounters, from my relationships. I didn't even know that you could have your own set of sexual needs, wants, and desires. Went on to find my now husband, who is anything but ambivalent towards me. And during our courtship, our healthy dating relationship that was supposed to just start as a one-night stand, met him on an app in California. He said to me, "Hun, all of these things that you're telling me, you should start a business about this." And I said, "What? Like, who would do that?" And he said, "No, seriously, I think you should go back to school and I think you should see what it could be if you started a business." So I went to school and I thought I would bring my sexual health information that I was learning into maternal health because that's the field that I had been in for a decade. Oh. I had built a nonprofit to acquisition, but it wasn't but 6 months into school that I thought, oh my gosh, she's right. I've got to do this thing. So in January of 2022, I hung up my shingle for Sex Ed for You, my business. I had a reel go viral on Instagram a little later, and now I work with individuals and partnerships all over the world to reclaim and reaccess what is theirs, to sexually flourish in whatever unique form that looks like for them, not in some cookie cutter way, not in some old script way. Yeah. We work to dig out these beliefs just like I did. And it's the most glorious thing in the world. And then wouldn't you know, about a couple months into my work, my first husband texted me late one night and said, "Lauren, I wanted you to know before I tell the world, I'm gay." And so it has been this lovely reclamation of the years that were lost. Yeah. That now we are these beautiful co-parents together of our 14-year-old. And I'm happily partnered and he's happily partnered. And it's just beautiful. So that's my story in a nutshell.
It's so beautiful. I love that you start with the religious background, because for me, I know that I... you know, my whole world starts crumbling, right? Not the picture's not, you know, all the illusions that I was taught, all the things, right? This picture perfect. So I can totally relate to like everything just one by one, just like a lie after lie after lie.
It was like crumbling, right? I mean, people talk about a deconstruction. I'm like, I didn't need to deconstruct. The wall fell.
Yeah.
I didn't need to do anything.
I love the movie Inception. It just reminds me of just that, you know?
That's exactly how it feels. 100%.
Exactly. And, religious, like my spiritual beliefs, I didn't get to the bottom of really what was coming up for me, because I just kept like knocking things down as it went. And I didn't realize that at the bottom, to my core, right, in my fabric of every story and everything, was my religious beliefs. So I'm from Salt Lake City, Utah, Mormon housewives, that whole idea, you know, like we've got all sorts of things going on here. And so I didn't even think to necessarily that was going to be what I was going to find. I didn't think that it was going to be my core beliefs that I was going to have to look at there. And that's terrifying.
It's absolutely terrifying. And I'm so glad you bring that up, because I think we so often, because of society, because of religion, because of culture, have so far separated sexuality from everything else.
Yes.
We don't think it's connected. We don't think it's connected at all.
Well, and I'll take that a step farther because I actually had separated myself from my body. So I had gotten very, very disassociated because everything was outside of me, right? Like God, my husband, the afterlife, you know, like it was just all this, like, you know, the nothing at the temples, right? Like it was all about, you know, visiting outside temples instead of the actual temple that was here. And so I remember asking a question. It was probably, I don't know, 15 years ago. And I was coming out of a yoga class and I was on my like spiritual high, which I had really just converted self-development to my spiritual format.
Right.
Right. And I just started using different language and I'm like, okay, I've healed and I'm there. And you know, this was 15 years ago. And so I come out of this yoga class and I say to myself, I remember this is, you know, that voice in your head where I say, do I even need to focus on my body? And I remember saying, it was a genuine question because what I was asking was, is if my idea of like what a Christ would be that if I live this very service-oriented spiritual life, won't my body just like transform? Like, won't I be so spiritual just by being spiritual outside of myself? And it took me almost a decade to just keep going in and keep going. I had no idea that the question I was asking was so profound. And so I love the work that you're doing. I love where you started because that wholeness idea of where sacred sexuality, where sacredness is for me, where the temple is for me, where the altars are for me now are so different. And well, I mean, they're just inside, right? Like that I've actually accessed them now.
Yes.
Not this
yes.
mystery anymore. And so I love where you start there because it's a testament to obviously how deep you've gone into your own journey. And so take me into your business a little bit. I want to play with a little bit of what framework or what do you see the most of? You say you had a TikTok that went viral. What is it in your message? What is it in your world that really kind of allows people to be drawn to you? And again, aside from your soul that I could like, give me a little bit of context on what you see every day. What are some of the common things?
So it's funny that you kind of comboed those two. I think that, funnily enough, as you just named the body being so important, I think that one of the things that does bring clients to me is my soul.
Yeah.
I think that they can truly feel that I mean what I say.
Yeah.
And that this is such a, for me, a pain to purpose story. Mm-hmm. I have so many clients who say, Lauren, I don't mean this in a mean way, but if you can do this, anybody can do this. Like, your story's really bad.
Yeah.
And I am so proud of that. There's this idea of the wounded healer, Chiron, this idea of going back and rescuing, right? Yeah. Kind of going back in and bringing us out. And yeah. I truly believe that that is part of my purpose here on this earth.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't change a thing. And I wonder if you feel the same way sometimes, right?
It was so perfect.
I wouldn't go back. Folks will sometimes hear my story and their jaws will just drop and they'll say, I'm so sorry. And I say, yes, I'm so sorry for those smaller versions of ourselves too. I want to just wrap them in some big hug. And I wouldn't change it. I am so darn thankful for the empathy that exists inside my body and my soul that allows me to live this life in this body here on this earth to the fullest now.
Yeah.
And so I think what truly draws folks to my work is my deep belief in every human's right to self-determination and every human's right to informed decision-making. And what I always say is that willfully withholding information about our bodies from human beings, that it does not enable them to make the fullest, most informed decisions is downright unethical. And this is the type of thing that went viral on Instagram, not TikTok. I have to be clear. I wish I was on TikTok. No, I wish. Nope, not. It was just something about my overlapping worlds at that time, which was so interesting. It was early on in my sexual health career. And yet there was this reel going viral about a woman going to a GYN appointment and being in the paper gown and being so uncomfortable and having things done to her body. And I just stood in my honesty and said, no, This is your appointment. Wear a comfy dress, wear socks, wear something that is so cozy to you. You run this appointment. You tell them, do not put your hands on me until I say so. You bring a plastic speculum if you like. You ask them for warmth. Do not have this whole conversation in a paper wrap. Have this conversation in your clothes. And I think it was this convergence of truth. So I had been in this maternal health world for a decade, but then I was bringing the idea of consent, wouldn't you know, even to GYN appointments. And that, of course, is some of the work that I do is, of course, equipping individuals who are going into their care appointments, how to use their voice, how to access their voice. But I think what really resonated was choice. Dr. Betty Martin, one of my favorite scholars, says the choosing is more important than the doing. And oh my goodness, if I had had that understanding that I had a right to choose, that I could have said, oh no, I don't choose this, that I could have gotten into the marriage that I got into and then realized, well, this, I can annul this marriage. I say, but I didn't know that I had a choice. And I still remember sitting with a therapist as I was getting out of the marriage that I was in to begin with. And she said, why are you choosing to stay? And I looked her deep in the eyes and I kid you not, I said, choosing?
Yeah.
I didn't know I had a choice.
Yeah.
And that is downright scary.
Yes.
And that is oppression. And that is control.
Yes.
And that is not a safe existence.
No. No.
And so I think the thing that I work on most with clients is finding their voice, finding their deepest wants, equipping them with tools. And I love to say, folks, that therapy looks backwards. Education and coaching like mine works forwards.
Yeah.
And I deeply believe that if we can identify the gaps like I had, right, in our stories, in our understandings through a few modalities, and we can go through a couple of them today, I believe that we can go, No. That's a gap. Let's fill in the knowledge gap. And then by learning new things, we create chaos in our brain, which allows us to create new neural pathways, which allows us to step into new existence. And I don't think, call me crazy, that it's that complicated, that we have been told that we are stuck. We have been fed this depraved, stuck victim story.
Yeah.
It's just not true.
Yeah. I can't move forward without talking about choice because—
Let's do it.
What you're saying, if we slow this down a little bit so that, you know, my listeners and so, you know, people can really feel what we're saying here because the words really, like everything, right? It's not really capturing. I mean, I feel what you're saying to such a degree because even religiously and in my psyche and in my programming, agency and choice was the foundation really of what our religion was supposed to be on, right? It was just this idea of like, we had choice and we had like, and it was constantly talked about, which is so interesting and part of the brainwashing in such a big way, because it was like, you have a choice, but this is what you should do, right? And I know better than you do, right? So it was so heavily ingrained that this is the map and this is what we know, right? And this is like, and so you don't stray from this. You don't go anywhere else from this, right? And so the trap in that choice, I remember the feeling myself of like, I mean, I stayed and I fought and I cycled because I'm like, this doesn't make sense. Like, this is everything I know. And what am I doing wrong? And I must need to do this. And I kept going back in. And I mean, I went in several times to try and make something work because that was what I was taught was supposed to work. It just, my world didn't make sense without it. I didn't know what to do. Right. And so I'll never forget that moment when I was like, choice is terrifying.
Yes.
Because my whole life I believed I was choosing, but I wasn't. And to lose that, to lose the excuses, to shed the perceived safety,
yes,
right, of what I should do. And I know, in my head, I had to rework every thought almost that I had, because every thought I had was, what is the right thing to do? What should I be doing? And I didn't know what's good, what's bad. You know, like I had no frame in my mind, in my neural pathways. I had no frame to say, what do you choose? Not one, you know, and I'll never forget the feeling of wait, like this is terrifying. And there's sparks in me that's starting to say this might be possible, but it was just like everything had to rewire in such a big way. And so I love what you said, you know, the quote of choosing is more important than the doing, because I think that this applies to everything in our life.
Everything.
Everything.
Everything. I say that, I mean, one of my favorite quotes is, sex is not everything. It is just a part of everything.
Yes.
And right. This idea of choice is inherent, is where agency and autonomy lives.
Yeah.
And yet it is so incredibly vulnerable.
Yeah.
It is scary out there in the land of choice.
Yes.
Right? It is scary to have to take accountability
yes.
for one's own choice.
Yes.
Right? Dr. Betty Martin, same one, talks of this idea of a domain. So if we think about a box around you and around me, mm-hmm. right? And everything within our domain is the things that we have a right to and a responsibility for. And that was the wildest thing to start to swallow for myself is yes. how much had I abdicated my own responsibility to all that existed inside of my domain? How much of myself had I put in the domain of another, right? Yes. Here, husband, take care of me.
Yeah.
When my clients and I are beginning work together, we go through a personal sexuality timeline, and then we identify some beliefs. And one of them is, who does your body belong to at this point in your life?
Mm-hmm.
And so we go through and do a fill in the blank. My body belongs to fill in the blank at all of these memories that they give me.
Yeah,
I would have said God, my father, my future husband, over and over and over again. Yeah. And what that did through indoctrination mm-hmm. is cause me to truly not understand the responsibility I had for myself.
Mm. I love that you're using the word responsibility. It's not lost on me that you're oldest of like five children, right? You said.
Right.
That's not lost on me, right? Like the word responsibility, right? It's inherently, it means usually to us in the beginning, right? That it's for other people, right? It's just like, again, the pathway that doesn't switch in my mind that my responsibility to myself,
right,
is what I share with everything and everybody, right? It's just like, yes, that is the effect of that. But the responsibility to myself, that return to myself was so tender and so sacred, right? And you mentioned, I want to bring that tenderness into, you know, the responsibility to myself. I want to bring it into the part where you said, in the very beginning of your story, you said that you became the version of yourself, right? You became the person that you always needed. And that deserves a little bit of space, because I think that that responsibility, that return, that ability, right, to create the life that we want, or to choose the power, right, that it is in that, you know, the sacredness, there's just so many things that that return really does. And when I thought that God was coming to save, Jesus was coming to save, that, you know, that my husband was going to come back from all of his, you know, wildness, you know, and that like everybody, you know, somebody was coming for me. So it's interesting because I'm the youngest of seven. And so I didn't realize that in my upbringing, somebody was always there, right? As neglected as I felt, I had siblings everywhere, right? And so this idea of like someone's coming, I got to the very deepest, darkest question of like, do I even want to live? That is how deep I had to get before I could answer the question that it's me I'm looking for.
Yes.
Right? Like that's how dark it had to get. That's how deep it had to get for me to say, like, I don't understand why someone's not coming. And you beautifully just said, you know, it's just like, we don't get taught that it is us that we're looking for, that is the very power that we have to connect to ourselves. And so I really wanted to, you know, point that out, that you just led people into such a beautiful space.
Thank you. I am so thankful for this piece of your story. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah,
what an honor.
Yeah.
Because yes, right. I think often as human beings, as folks who love story, we want to skip to the good part, right? And no, the most precious part of my story is the moments where I was on the kitchen floor and couldn't get up, are the moments where I was living with my daughter, who was 8 at the time, in basement apartment with a rat dying in the wall, and she was sleeping in my bed and there wasn't enough heat for the whole place, and my car would freeze over in the winter, and we were in the most unsafe part of my town. Those moments were so crucial because there was this day where it had kind of warmed up enough outside and my main door was unlocked and open and my screen door was the only thing closed, and I was scrubbing a little place on the floor and the wind blew and some wind chimes were hanging outside and I heard them and the breeze touched my face and I thought, I'm okay. I am home in myself.
Mm.
And this is probably the poorest I will ever be,
mm-hmm.
the most alone I will ever be,
mm-hmm.
and I am okay.
Mm.
And there was something in that moment where, yes, I came home to myself.
Yeah.
I knew that I was there for me,
mm-hmm.
and that no one could take that away.
Yeah.
I was now operating from my value system.
Yeah.
I was now making choices, baby ones, waking up and going, what today do I need? In this long day that I have, what would take care of me best?
Yeah.
What ways do I need to feed my body, to support my body? In what ways do I need to rest that I alone am responsible for?
And for the first time in my life, I love that you're saying the smallest things. Like, what would serve me in this, like, food? Like, what food do I want? I didn't even know the answer to that question.
I didn't either.
I had no idea.
You would think that it was folks who had only grown up in high control religion, but it's not.
Oh, no.
It is so many of us. I think one of the most common questions I hear is, you know, I'm going through the intake process and we're talking about gaining the skill to communicate what you need, want, and desire.
Mm-hmm.
And then sheepishly, someone will look down and I will say, what is it? You know, share this with me.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll say, I don't know what I want.
Yeah.
And I say, you and me both.
Yeah.
Listen, this
yeah.
is the most common thing I hear is that we have all been so indoctrinated to be mind readers,
mm-hmm.
to anticipate the needs, wants, and desires of another, but not to become human beings full of integrity that are able to share what we want.
Yes.
And so then fast forward, I meet this human being on my dating app who's supposed to be a one-night stand. We end up falling deeply in love and building our life together. And he ends up proposing, and we're starting to enter into a familiar framework. And I will remember one of my best friends, who was one of the only people who I retained through my deconstruction, because she was simultaneously deconstructing.
Exactly.
And we were out to dinner, and she, through terrified eyes, looked at me and said, Lauren, but how can you be sure that this is safe, that he is the one? Like, how can you be sure that you want to do this again? And I started giggling, and she was
yeah.
like, I don't think this is a very giggle-worthy subject. Why are you giggling? And I said, oh, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
And she said, what? I said, I am no longer sure of anything. I am sure of one thing, though, that I will never desert myself again.
Yep.
And that should he, I don't know, have a mental breakdown, or should he deceive me? Should he choose to misalign with who I know him to be now? Should he choose not to honor me? Should any of these things happen? I choose me.
Yes.
And I just remember her jaw kind of hitting the floor. And I said, yeah, I have no idea what future is ahead. I only know that I will choose me and I will never desert her again.
Yeah. And so beautifully you articulated the, I would say, one of the most spiritual things you could say. And that is, like, the I don't know, right?
Yep.
It is the unknown, right? It is the idea of, like, wait a minute, it was all these years that I said that I did know, or everybody said that they know, right? Like, the safest thing to me now, right, is the I don't know. Because that is that exploration of, you know, being able to choose. I want to ask you a question, and because we went into some really deep and beautifully dark places that are just, like, full of, like, so many nuggets. Tell me about the shift between seeking struggle, seeking like growth, right? And the formula that once was for me, which is like, I better go put myself in the, like, in all of this contrast, right? I need contrast, and I need to be able to, like, and so much of that turned on me into this deep-seated belief of, like, something's wrong with me, right? Like,
yes.
Something, I need to get fixed. I need to be healed. I need to keep going on this journey, right? And it's like, yes, that served me in that first phase. I love that you're already like,
oh, my God. Yes, go. Keep going. Yes.
I just want to move into, like, the shift between really understanding what we deserve and the pleasure and following pleasure, right? Following that good feeling, when really it really was so much of the contrast that got us here, right? Like that whole framework shifts. Tell me about that shift for you, or even how you get people to shift into that. Or what is even your belief on it? I'm kind of assuming, but like, give me a little bit of idea on that.
No, I don't think anyone has ever asked me this on a podcast. So thank you for this opportunity to talk about something that is so important to me. Yeah, so I identify and I resonate. So within my framework in this Reformed Presbyterianism that I was raised in, this was literally a phrase of catechism I had to memorize at the tender age of like 7, right? We have so many of the similar practices. I am a sinner in the sight of God, justly deserving of his displeasure. And without whom, la, 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 la. I am a sinner in the sight of God, justly deserving of his displeasure. When you talk about the contrast and this understanding of self as inherently broken,
yes,
that was my existence.
Yes.
There was brownie points given for suffering, for
yes,
being at the foot of the cross in my type,
yes,
of rhetoric, right? Of needing to cling. The more broken your life was, the more you were lauded, right? You're getting jewels in your crown in heaven.
Yes.
All of this, like, well, you will be sanctified in heaven. In heaven, you will,
yes,
be without tears. There will be no suffering in heaven.
Yes. Exactly.
It's wild. So the moment, this was one of the walls crumbling moments.
Yes.
I was still in the church as I was beginning my process of leaving my marriage and yada yada. And I was losing my jewels as I was healing. As I was finding this place of homeostasis, as I was releasing my addiction to trauma, as I came to know it to be, as my striving was ceasing, I was literally pushed further and further away. People wanted nothing to do with me.
Totally.
As I found ease, as I found rest, as I found pleasure.
Yeah.
And so, yes, talk about one of the untold struggles, which,
yeah,
is stopping to struggle.
Yes.
Okay. So I definitely did a lot of research around, like I mentioned before, trauma addiction. Okay. This craving of the high and low.
Yeah.
This idea that homeostasis of healthy relationship with,
yeah,
self,
yes,
with other, with community, is actually kind of boring for the nervous system.
Yeah.
And you might find yourself in the early days repelled by hell. When you have grown up in a large chaotic household, when you have,
okay,
grown up being told that you are a sinner in the sight of God, justly deserving of his displeasure, and that so often in spiritual worlds, even outside of organized religion, you can find the same striving mentality.
Yes. Yes. I just converted it. Like, okay, now it's just got new language and I feel better about it.
Right. And yep, so I started to see this in yogic communities.
Mm-hmm.
I started to see this in so many different spiritual practices.
Yeah.
And I am just so thankful for all of my deconstruction so that I could look at it and go, you're just a horse of a different color.
Yeah.
This same type of, you must work harder.
Well,
this same type of what I have named it as conditional belonging that is only extended upon my belief and my behavior, I say no more to.
Mm.
No. If you are going to require me to be present at or to blah, blah, blah. No. If you are the authority versus me, no. That is not saying that I don't believe in accountability,
sure,
with those who are in the arena with you and who are willing to say, may I offer an opinion,
mm-hmm,
right? I love being sharpened and holding a mirror up for my friends, yeah, and them doing the same thing for me. Hell yes. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
But no, this addiction to continuing to work on self, right? The self-help,
yeah,
obsession is something that I see so many who come out of some type of structured control.
Yes.
Just continue to perpetuate. And so some of the things that truly helped me and that I invite clients into are this idea of pleasure is our birthright.
Yeah.
This idea of, right? How can we center rest, comfiness, coziness, taking care of self in the everyday?
Yeah.
This idea of ease.
Mm-hmm.
This idea of, it's so funny, in the Christian scriptures, we have this verse about how Jesus came to give life and life abundantly. This idea of rest is all throughout the Christian scriptures.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
yet it is just not celebrated. And so to say, wait, what does it truly look like to lean into this, not away from this?
Yeah.
To reject the struggling and striving gospel and to sit comfortably into what does my body need? And I can even No, I'll do it with clients even now, right? So I'll notice my body here in this chair where I'm sitting talking with you. And I'll do things like, when's the last time I swallowed? When's the last time I rested my back against the back of this chair? When's the last time I took a deep breath? And those things started with simple practices like regular massages, right? To have someone touch my body and say, you are holding tension here. Oh. It started with listening to my body in a bath, right? Bringing in Epsom salts and saying, what does it look like to take responsibility for my own rest, my own restorative practice? To say, this even is not somebody else's job. It's my job. There was so many times that within my structure, women were really lauded for being human givers, for this idea that they were to give and to give and to give. And so when I said, wait a second, what if I reject that idea? And what if it's my responsibility to know, to meet my needs, to ask for my needs to be met? And that if it is not my partner's wish to provide me with this thing that I need, well, how am I going to meet that need for myself? And to be constantly in that state of questioning, that state of curiosity, I would say next to choice and autonomy and agency, curiosity is my favorite thing. To say, well, wait, what do I need right now? And whose responsibility is that? Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, you, the way that you're in, the presence that you're in, and the way that you're describing these moments or these practices, right? Because again, I think we can intellectually start to, okay, I need to get in the bath, or I need to, you know, I can do all these things, right? So intellectually, I do everything, right? It's that disconnect that I have from that experience. And so I just really want to point out that when we go through that cycle of this is what we're broken and striving, there is a very real death, right? There's a very real, like, I don't know what comes next, because this has literally been I thought that was the end, right? I thought it was the end once once I became, or whatever it was, right? Like, that's, so what comes next? I'm, you know, midway through my life. I have no idea. And what I love about what you just did here is you gave me such a beautiful visual of birth, right? You took me even literally into water, which is where, like, we birth and we come from. And you are like, just feel the gift of this body, right? And the rebirthing process is, and I think we both were talking so much about those baby steps, and like, we are now feeding ourselves for the first time, right? And what do you want to feed, and what feels good? And just the consciousness of that rebirth is so massive. And I've never had that image before. I've never really thought about what I felt like rebirthing myself, right?
It's so cool.
There's that duality of, like, you know, I can get into other characters, and I have, you know, all this other past life and stuff. But ultimately, that's what's happening under the surface.
Yes. Well, it's so, so beautiful that you brought this up. And we knew we'd have a wonderful, beautiful connection moment. So maternal health was my work before. So I've been present at so many births.
Okay.
And the woman who got me out of my previous life is a doula and a midwife. And she kept having dreams about me. No lie. And so she took me on a walk one day in the midst of my absolute horror of a life. And she said, what is going on? And she was the first person. A doula means to be with woman. Midwife means to, deliver a woman through the birth process into, to bring life. And I just felt safe for the very first time to open my story. And so we would talk about, in my season of darkness, how absolutely this was a metaphorical picture of the childbirth experienced. And there is a season, not a season, an experience inside of birth called transition, where the body, the cervix, is literally going from 7 centimeters dilated to 10. And it is the most intense process of birth, where literally all of the birthing people that I have been with have said, I cannot do this. And they look me in the eyes and they say, I cannot do this. And a truly trained birth worker will look them in the eyes and say, you are already doing it. We are so powerful and so capable. And this process of a baby being born, they are going through darkness. They are going through the birth canal. And then they come out into life. And what I love about labor is that it is not pain without purpose.
No.
It is pain for the most glorious purpose, which is life. Which is interesting because so is sex, right? But this idea of dying, of crumbling. Yes, I am not at all the person I once was.
Mm-mm.
It had to fall away. I had to let it go. Yeah. And it is terrifying. One of my favorite authors, Christine Northrup, talks about this veil and that any person who has ever stepped through this veil into truth has felt terrified. And I do believe that it is not only our terror, it is the terror of our entire lineage.
Oh, I love
so
that.
Often we are the first person to rip through. There is sexual trauma throughout all generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so to step into your own voice as a sexual being, as a human being, can be terrifying.
Yeah.
And yet...
You just beautifully took us straight into the root, right? Straight
yes.
into that literal canal that where we hold safety, where we hold all of those, like, and it's just like, and for the first time, right? Like that is the space of like, I now know the connection to that space where
yes.
I was again, so disconnected from it because of course, like we already know the answers, you know, no one's really dying. Everyone's here, you know, just there was no process of death or grief.
No.
I didn't know how to do it.
Same.
I had
no idea
how to grieve. I had no idea how to actually die. Like, because in my world, you just didn't. You just like, oh, everyone's fine. I remember my mom passed away at the same thing. And I went to my daughter and, you know, grandma passed away. And within a millisecond, I'm like, but don't cry. Like, she's still here. And oh my gosh. And like, I just skipped entirely the entire process, which is, it was like, I had to go back, of course.
Of course.
You know? And, I didn't even realize how beautiful that you could tell that story in between your words, like, and that I could feel that, right? It's like, I knew what you were saying without you even saying it. It was just like, I could feel this birthing process. I didn't even realize that was what you do. I mean, how beautiful. I had a client the other day come in and I was having her describe what it means to be a woman. And she, you know, at a woman's, the divine feminine, like, what does that feel like? What does it feel like? And somatically, I wanted her to really start to integrate into this like divine feminine. And her only point of reference, right, was this very angelic, light, you know, powerful being, which is beautiful. And I agree, right? And then I was like, I let her sit in that for a minute. And I'm like, now let's go to childbirth. Right? And let's go to the gritty, the pain, the every month, what we go through, that cycle, the death, the rebirth. I'm like, there is nothing grittier than being a woman. There's nothing dirtier than being
yes.
a woman, right? There's nothing more grounding than being this birthing process. So I love that you bring this up because that moment of seven, right? I can't do this it exists in our cycles everywhere.
And you know what's so interesting too is as I studied, you know, the influence of patriarchy on our culture, on religions and all of these things, it is kind of through that we got this idea of perfection as anything that we even should be trying to aim for.
Yes.
And that so often the quote unquote feminine, which we all have access
to,
is dirty and messy and right, the process of planting a garden and getting your fingers in the dirt. And we deserve seasons of messiness.
Mm-hmm.
And I will fight to the death for it to protect the sacredness of the mess, of the blood, of this dirt.
Yes.
We get to, that is how things come to life. That is how we get beauty.
Yeah.
That is how we see art.
Yes.
Right. When you look at a painter, right, and their palette and themselves and they're covered. And then you look at the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel, right? It is the process of bringing this sacred power into the world it is messy.
It is.
And I reject this theory that it is, just the Madonna.
Yeah.
Just this chaste, pure thing.
Yeah.
Sure. Yes, it is angelic. And we can do that too.
Yeah.
And it's not everything. It is this birth force that I wish that we as a culture so lauded and celebrated because I do believe that it gives people in male bodies freedom too. When my now husband came into my life, I had also completely overhauled my menstrual cycle and how I honored my body. And he now is, he'll often say, I'm jealous. And I'm like, what are you talking about? And I literally view my menstrual cycle as an opportunity to edit my story once a month. I sit there, I let go, deeply journal what business practices are no longer serving me, what relationships, where do I need to edit and step into and love myself? What do I need to let go of? And it is such a sacred time to me now, where we know what I eat differently, we know what I need, and I ask for it, that he has often said, I'm honestly just amazed and hungry for similar. And so we've encouraged, like him, his body feels the moon so much. And so we encourage him when there's a full moon to do the same things, right? And we all deserve this. We're not stuck. We get to be choice makers all the time.
I mean, you just gave us such a huge nugget there, right? And anybody listening, I encourage you to rewind, to go back through that process and really look at the mirror and the reflection and the permission that you just gave, right? Like sometimes we need that mirror. Sometimes we need that mirror to say, like, wait, this is something I can experience every month, every day, every whatever, right? Like the permission to really go in and let go and feel that process. I want to move it really quickly before we go. I want to move this into the sexual arena, because I think that the what we've touched on deserves to be able to talk about the idea of, like, because we were in the root, right? Because we were in those deep, really gritty, dirty spaces, we have these primal instincts, right? We have these animals in us, right? And we are part of the animal kingdom. And anybody out there that wants to experience orgasm and pleasure and you know, the entire experience within the body to get even to some of those spaces, right? You can't get there without knowing your inner animal. You can't get there without going into these deep, dark spaces, right? And it's like, and these practices sexually, right? Everything that we have talked about today can be and is taken into our play practice, our sexual practices, our partner practices, our sacred practices. And that is, so for me, right? Like we talked about this, like, you know, I intellectually went through things, and then I put it back in framework, and then I was in narrative, and I was in my head, and like I had this whole journey, right? I've been on it for like 20 years, but nothing, right? Nothing like a coach like yourself or myself was ever, like, nothing is faster, nothing is better, nothing is more fulfilling than just putting it into the present moment in a sexual practice, and everything happens right there, right? It's just like, if you want the shortcut, if you want... you want it right here, right now, right? It's like, it's available, right? We have access to all of that. And so give me just a little bit of, like, some of the practices, just because, I mean, you've just already given us so much gold, right? Like, give me just some of the practices that you would give, you know, the women specifically, maybe, you know, and men, to start the journey of understanding the value of pleasure, understanding the value, right? Because even in our culture, I can already hear a lot of my clients saying, you don't seek pleasure. Pleasure is like the root of, like if you seek pleasure, you're seeking something short-term gain where you're not going to get long-term rewards. That is all over in our culture.
All over.
Don't seek pleasure because that's the short-term, that's going to get you in trouble. That's where the evil is. That's where the devil is. That's where it's just like, and there's such a taboo around that, right? And so the value of these practices, the value of pleasure, the value of following that through our body, you know, give me some of the things that you start people on with that.
Yes, well, this is exactly how I brought myself back to life.
Yes, me too.
And I used Betty Dodson's term, which is making love alone. I deeply believe that we have a right and responsibility to become the first and best and last lovers to ourselves.
That's perfect.
And until we can do that, the sex that we have with others, the intimacy that we enjoy with others, the pleasure that we play in that realm with others is going to be meh. As we do things like what I'm about to share, I deeply believe it absolutely implants all of this goodness inside of us. Yeah. So, and I did this myself, and this is what I would have my clients do. I would have them
the portals of it.
Exactly. I would set aside a night just for yourself, like dating yourself. I would start with a long, luxurious shower or a bath. Then I would lotion yourself up again, like you're going to go out on a date with yourself. And then I would put something on your skin that delights you, whether that's nothing, whether that's lace, whether that's satin or silk or cotton.
I do not care, but choose the fabric. What do you want to wrap around yourself? And then I would start with a Michaela Boehm. If no one has read Wild Woman's Way, start there. Such a great book. And she talks about this delocalized pleasure practice of starting with your head and working all the way down to your feet. Set a timer for 20 minutes and just massage and tickle and stroke your body, not your genitals, not your erogenous zones, just your body. Yeah. Notice what types of pressure do you like on your kneecaps? And what about your elbows? One of my favorite places is right here on my inner arm, just stroking it with my fingernails. But I didn't find that until this practice.
Oh, yeah.
And so I would just touch my body from head to toe, set a timer. Yes. And then I would bring it into my genitals.
Yeah.
And I would bring it into, what do my breasts like now? Mm-hmm. What does my vulva like now? Where even is my clitoris? I mean, for me, I had to start at the very beginning. I had to start with locating where my nerve clusters were, where the different spaces on my body that felt good.
Yeah.
And then I engaged Betty Dodson's rock and roll. I would learn to engage my pelvic floor and move my body in accordance with my breath while I was allowing, yes, my naughty, lovely, primal, pleasure-filled brain to descend into my deepest wants, to go into fantasy, to go into enjoying my body, to enjoy what I now call erotic self-focus.
Yeah.
I would watch myself in a mirror. I would make love to myself.
Beautiful.
And I there would I be able to find an orgasm that was brought by me, for me, and enjoyed by me. No one else. Mm. It was not for the performative pleasure.
Yeah.
It was not to be witnessed. It was not to be the object of someone's desire, which is, can be lovely. But until I could be the object of my own pleasure, there was no moving forward. It was mandatory. There would be candles lit. I would enjoy a glass of wine if I wanted, or hot tea, and I would just luxuriate. Sometimes I would have chocolate. And this entire evening was for me.
Yeah.
And it became my favorite practice, something that literally was on my calendar that I would say, no, I can't. I have plans that night.
Exactly.
The plans were myself. And it was non-negotiable. It still is. A solo sex practice is mandatory in my relationship now.
Mm.
It is not my husband's job to provide me with pleasure, to make sure that I am satiated. No, that can never again belong to someone else. Mm. My pleasure belongs to me. I and I alone am responsible for my own pleasure.
Mm. I mean, the permission and the power and the mirror. Go ahead.
The permission. Yes. The permission granting is so revolutionary. We could spend an entire other hour talking just about permission.
Yes. I mean, but there is such a gift and there's such a power and there is such a wholeness and a connection to your soul when you give that permission that I hope everybody that gets to come in contact with you or that's listening to this really, again, rewind, feel that, what you just said there, because the guilt that comes in, the shame that comes in, all the programming or the loudness, you know, it's like, it's about my kids. It's about, you know, here's all the things I should be doing I'm cheating on my husband somehow or whatever it is, right? Like, and you know, I was numb. I was so disconnected.
Same.
that practice, I had to wake up. Almost
Same.
Every, you know, is that rebirthing process of like, you know, here's where it should feel good, but I have to stay here and I have to nurture and I have to like, I have to actually give my body permission and safety, right? Which is huge, which is what you're talking about. Like I had to feel safe enough because that was so shamed, right? Like I had no idea what that even meant. So that was such beautiful permission to, and I love that you're even adding some command in there, which I think is really valuable because it's a language that I think we can help feel into of like, this is mandatory. Like, this isn't just, and again, if we teeter on, you know, yes, you have agency and yes, you have to decide and yes, you have choice, but I will witness, right? That without this practice, without moving in, without knowing my own body, without exploring my own body, there is nothing to practice with somebody else because it is all happening here anyways, right? Like, even when you are with a partner, right?
Yes.
Like it's inside your body that you have to be in order to even like have that reflection and that connection. You don't leave your body and go to your partner's body and give him something or vice versa. Like I'm not
waiting
for my partner to give me something.
this is such a beautiful, beautiful like cap on this whole conversation. Yeah. I deeply believe that we do not give or receive pleasure, no. That pleasure is a physiological experience within our own bodies.
Yes.
What we can give, if requested, is time or attention.
Perfect.
And so for us to understand our own pleasure is our, again, right and responsibility. Yeah. And I tell clients all the time, you don't have to. You absolutely don't have to. There is no right. Choice is important. Yep. And yep. Folks will come to me who are possibly identifying under the asexual umbrella. And I will say all the time, my goodness, no, you can live a juicy life.
Yeah.
Where you are not engaging in these practices. And yet knowing that you desire not to is just as important. It still starts with this permission. It still starts with this knowledge of self.
Yes. Yes. Thank you so much for this conversation. I am so fulfilled and I am so grateful that you were here. This is not by accident and the mirror is such a gift for me to be here. So thank you so much for sharing with us. You are absolutely stunning.